I take it we're complete there. So I had shared an article, and I want to thank Susan for her feedback and her input on the article that I'd written on what's going on in the Mideast. And it's transformed partly, again, thank you, Susan, because of Susan's input to a whole different thing. And the first, I think probably with the time we've got, we might cover the first half of the article, which the first half is about complete, although there have been several new ideas that have come in the last day or two. But we're looking to deal with suffering. And so, do you want healing from your suffering, from repeated family patterns, from repeated hostility and fear? If your physiology is in pain or has diseases or dysfunctions, what does that say about you? Does it say you're a victim of disease? Well, victimhood's a great place to go if you don't want to be responsible and you want to be disconnected from the ability to change what's creating the issue. Then, you know, go for the victimhood. If your mind is spewing, especially at the most inopportune moments, I remember working with a woman who was very much into her religion, and she had done some of this work. And one day she said to me, she said, we're processing a little bit. Like, I just don't know what's going on. Every once in a while, I'm a good Christian woman, and I have Jesus, and I got it together with him. But, every once in a while, this rage just pops up inside of me, and I don't know what to do with it. I said, well, it's a really simple answer. If rage pops up from inside of you, it's because it's inside of you. Oh, no, I've got that all handled, but what's going on? And it was just there were no ears for, Yeshua said, you've got some work to do. And here's the work that needs to be done. The fact that it's showing up inside of you means it's inside of you. The fact that it's showing up in your mind, you can't. One of my favorite stories, Jeannie actually reminded me of it just yesterday. We were talking with Aria, and there's a cute little joke I like to tell to Aria, and I've now told it to her so many times, she just rolls her eyes and puts her head down when I tell it. But Jeannie shared that there's one of those jokes that I tell sometimes in the work that she feels the same way about. But I know that's not really true. She loves this joke, so I'm going to share it to start with. And it's a story about the little old lady. You have any comment there, Jeannie? No? Okay. Little old lady who just loves movies. She's a little hard of hearing. She can't see very well. So she likes to get to the theater early and get the front row seat. Well, this new big film is coming out, and she leaves early, so she's sure to get her front row seat. And it turns out there's this whole just block up of traffic. She gets to the theater late. She gets the last seat in the very back of the theater. And there's this young couple in front of her, and throughout the whole film, she's a little hard of hearing, and throughout the whole film, this couple's just laughing back and forth, laughing hysterically. And finally, little old lady jabs this girl on the shoulder. She says, young lady, are you feeling hysterical? And the girl kind of stutters for a minute, isn't sure what to say. She finally says, well, he was feeling mine first. You can't feel anybody else's. If you're feeling it, it belongs to you. And victimhood is an option if you want to continue with those buried experiences popping their heads up at the most inopportune times in your life. Shutting your breath down, holding your breath, speaking or thinking as though something outside of you is the cause of what's moving inside of you, that's a sure way to make sure you never heal that pattern and that it goes on and is passed from generation to generation. So this article is looking at some of the most traumatic events that people have happened in their lives and what you can do about it. Recognize that life is construction and delivery. Life source is nothing. And if you're going to flesh out the experience of life as an actual human being, that means that you're going to have to make space in your flesh for the active presence of love for your human life. So this article's focal line, it's actually going to be posted when I post it, along with a an article that was written by a British writer in London who has interviewed a family who lives in London, an Israeli family who lives in London, and who has some family who was in the Middle East and was killed. And so these generational atrocities, sooner or later, somebody's got to grow up. And instead of, well, see, we'll just kill the bad guys, which just gives rise to a whole new crop of bad guys when you understand how the world works. So I read this particular quote that I'm going to start with when I talked about this article a week or so ago, but it's a whole different animal now. So approximately 4,000 years ago, after much suffering, Job offered the world a deep, difficult, and rarely comprehended lesson in responsibility, how the world works, and creatorship. In one sentence, he explained the physics, the psychology, and the emotional dynamics of how repeated traumatic events and suffering are created. In Job 3:25, he said, "For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me." Now, I'm happy anywhere anybody wants to pop in, hit one, have a conversation about any point we're making here. Jeannie, if that happens, give me a little sound signal, and then as soon as I finish the thought, I'll jump off. So that's, again, I'm going to repeat that from Job 3:25. "For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me." Now, when you unpack it, that's a huge piece of information. Let's look at it. When we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear and fully unpack Job's insight, we come to understand our part in causing the terrible events and repeating generational patterns in our lives. He plainly and emphatically tells us that the dreaded outcomes in our lives begin in our own minds, that fear and dread attached to a fantasized outcome set the blueprint for events that will be delivered by life, and that when we add one additional emotional amplifier, guilt, into the scenario, you have the perfect trifecta for victimhood and repeated trauma. The profound conclusion implicated in Job's deep experiential learning is the fact that the power to bring about results in our world lies in the mind entertaining a complex of negative thoughts and intensifying the energy of that complex with fear. This is one of the first indications of which I'm aware of a rudimentary understanding of the world of quantum physics. If one wishes to rid themselves of a feared, dreaded event, fighting against that result in the world is futile. For by simple resistive engagement in the energy, energy is added to the cause which is within. One who knew said, "Resist not evil." As long as fear and dread are attached to a negative fantasy in the mind, the world must deliver on its promise. Ask and you will receive. Guarantee. Somehow the result will continue to arrive right on time as anticipated until the cause is removed. I offer that one of the main purposes of the rest of the books that accompany Job in a collection called the Bible are man's attempt to understand and resolve the dilemma Job presented. How? How does the blind application of fear to a clearly unwanted result bring about precisely the result in question again and again? And what can I do about it? Now, referring to the article that this is designed to be posted with, a family, many families, are wiped out again. As in this case, each says, and this is a quote from one of the family members who lost family members in the attack in Israel, "We really don't understand why this is happening to us." A shocking event in Israel. An equally shocking change of thinking and understanding will be needed to bring us to sanity and resolution. Do not expect the answer to conform to your understanding of how the world works, especially if you think someone else is to blame. And if in bewilderment you've asked the question, why is this happening to me again? Recognize you are going to have to change some of the deepest dynamics at work in your own mind. And there's only one answer that will ever bring serenity and healing into reach. This Mideastern generational war, as with virtually every cultural enemy and family squabble in history, has gone on too long. No one is born with hatred or enemies. Each is a learned, corrupted construct instilled within any mind that swims in the toxic mental environments of fear and or hostility. Eventually, until questioned, living in these aberrant states will become normal and true, just the way it is. And you remember that one of the keys in the forgiveness process is to look at the way you want it and the way your mind shows you it is. Anyone questioning what has become a cultural norm will be labeled traitor and lumped in with the enemy. This is an idea usually promoted by those who are profiting off of maintaining some particular group of enemies. Notice how often, as profit or other beneficial viability of one enemy fades, another is fabricated. Eisenhower warned us. Major General Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine of his day, way back in 1935, wrote in detail about it. And Jenny, I'll send you the link so you can put in the notes. In the article, there will be a link to a free download of his book, War is a Racket. Here is literally the most decorated Marine of the day back in 1935. And he tells the truth about what his job was in the military and how he unconsciously played that job out until he woke up, and what's really behind the game of war. The title of his book, you can, if you want to just Google it, you'll find it online. There are several sites that have full unedited copies of it too, that you can read, download free and read. I worked with a client about 30 years ago. She shared with me that she became an activist and advocate for her community's enemy when her own children were taught one aspect of math in school by removing those people who they were being taught were the enemy. I hope that made sense. I'm not going to explain it, but if it didn't make sense, someone drop me a note and tell me if that fits. I hope that summarized what that situation was. And then I'm going to provide two more scriptural quotes. 1 Samuel 15:3. "Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass." Joshua 6:21 says, "And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass, with the edge of the sword." Another version of that passage says, "Go in and clean house. Don't leave anything breathing." This is about what Hamas did, right? "Don't leave a donkey, a child, a woman, an old man, or an old woman breathing. Wipe out Jericho." Now, these are instructions supposedly given by the Creator. And I put that in a big set of of quotes. Excuse me, I'm making a note. What is the work required for actual healing? As long as war and traumatic energetic memories exist in the psyche of humans, those dynamics will, when resonated to activity, reflect in the mind as thought disorders. As long as atrocities remain unresolved in the genes, the family systems, and in the teachings, myths, modeling, and stories of people, generation after generation will live in the desert of unresolved, projected internal trauma expressed as destructive behavior. Actually, I'm going to add to that, generation after generation will live and die in the desert of unresolved, projected internal trauma expressed as destructive behavior. These painful actions will be repeatedly played out within the family and or with neighbors, which will appear as enemies within the unsuspecting, so-inflicted mind. Carl Jung defined these unresolved thought disorders carried by everyone as the shadow. In antiquity, experiencing life through a mind filled with thought disorders was described using many metaphors. Seeing as though through a glass darkly, or being lost in the desert are two of them. In a mind where love is restricted or voided altogether, again, give me a second here, I'm making a note. So in a mind where love is restricted or voided altogether by unresolved hostility and fear, aberrant perception governs. In the radically infected mind, we call that person mentally ill. In a less injured mind, we label ourselves and others as angry, depressed, agitated, rageful, violent. In the trauma-informed mind, the shadow colors, defines, and gives meaning to everything perceived, including the self. With sufficient energetic trauma, the experience of itself, as it truly is, as love, as worthy, as capable, as acceptable, as honorable, as deserving of approval and being cared for, is obliterated. When a mind constructs its worldview and its experience of self through dynamics rooted in thought disorders, it is self-inflicted pain. Unknowingly, that mind is engaging, as Job said, in a creative act. Jung brilliantly outlined both the impact and the solution of succumbing to seeing ourselves and the world through such a mind. Quote, this is directly from the writings of Carl Jung. Greater than all physical dangers are the tremendous effects of delusional ideas, which are yet denied all reality by our world-blinded consciousness. Until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives, and we will call it fate. Direct quote from Carl Jung, probably one of the greatest psychiatrists of all time. Enemies do not exist in the actual world. They are a fabrication, a perceptual construct of the projected shadow side of one's own mind. This is why the felt experience of an enemy is so painful. The whole experience is internally generated. One such expression of this dynamic is the parent who attempts to explain away their perverted actions based in unresolved thought disorders, making a note. So let me back up there. So one such expression of this dynamic is the parent who attempts to explain away their perverted actions based in unresolved thought disorders toward a son or daughter. I'm only beating, berating, degrading you because I love you, and it hurts me more than it does you for me to do this to you. No, Mom. No, Dad. You're abusing me because you and I are existing in a desert of unresolved generational family trauma. And I offer, it does not hurt you in the least to do this to me. It alleviates and gives a vent to the unconscious pain you live with every day. Rachel Yuda and her colleagues, researchers in the growing field of epigenetics and the intergenerational effects of trauma, have long studied mass trauma survivors and their offspring. Their latest results reveal that the descendants of people who survived the Holocaust have changed physiology and nervous systems, different stress hormone profiles than their peers, perhaps predisposing them to anxiety disorders. And if you want to look that up, you can look it up in Scientific American magazine, Rachel Yehuda, Yehuda. Many, if not all of our wounds and conflicts, and therefore our pain and inclinations toward violent emotions, thoughts, and behaviors, are rooted in genetically inherited traumas. That is Jung's shadow. We start putting the pieces all together, it all just makes so much sense. Once again, many, if not all of our wounds, conflicts, and therefore our pain and inclinations toward violent emotions, thoughts, and behaviors are rooted in genetically inherited traumas. Jung's shadow. Multi-generational assaults reinforced through unconscious actions generation after generation, stored and projected repeatedly ad nauseum. And that repeated projection is projection on family, friends, enemies, and self. Big wake-up call, and this happens ad nauseum. Each painful event appears to be a distinct and separate event, connected by nothing, except that it's happening again. Carl Jung, once again, describing the source of our unconsciously driven behavior and the seemingly avoidable repeating patterns of generational, seemingly unavoidable repeating patterns of generational trauma and conflict, explains why the patterns repeat and the only way true resolution can be resolved, can be achieved. Again, this is a quote directly from Carl Jung. Whatever is rejected from the self through blame in the world, called perception, as an event. So whatever we hide from ourselves is going to show up in our minds as an event. We meet ourselves time and again in 1,000 disguises on the path of life, says Jung. Until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives, and we will call it fate. everything that irritates us about others can lead to understanding oneself. It is a trick perpetrated by biased, corrupted perceptual constructs in the mind that allows us to think that these events are all separate and separated from each other. The connecting link, when the mind allows us a glimpse, is that they're all based on unresolved traumas that, when activated, obscure the subtle, permanently available human experience of ourselves as our true nature, love. When disconnected from our true essence, when vision is blocked by pain, these unresolved but resolvable dynamics express as attack and defense, as long as they remain unconscious in the psyche of the individual or the community. Albert Einstein, back in 1950, opined the resolution of block pain. A human being is a spatially and temporally limited piece of the whole, what we call the universe. He experiences himself and his feelings as separate from the rest, an optical delusion of his consciousness. The quest for liberation from this bondage is the only true religion. Not nurturing, or we could say tolerating the illusion, but only overcoming it gives us the attainable measure of inner peace. And I would add to that, thus the release from compulsive violence. Do we want resolution or vengeance? Which is, for the unconscious, referred to as justice. You know, most people cry for justice. What they really mean is, I want vengeance. The 13th century Sufi mystic Rumi offers, love is the cure for your pain. Your pain will keep giving birth to more pain until your eyes consistently exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. Love is the cure, for your pain will keep giving birth to more pain until your eyes consistently exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. We must put an end to the multi-generational fantasy of victimhood that is our corrupted perception seems to prove is true. We must rethink the lie that somehow being a victim earns us the right to exact vengeance, as we block awareness of the damage even thinking about vengeance it inflicts on us. Remember, on the worksheet, the last step, I get the original of everything I send to someone else. Someone says to me, well, you know, Michael, you didn't see what they did, but what they did was so terrible, they really deserve my rage. And I say, well, actually, I did see what they did, and I agree with you. It was horrific. It was terrible. But the question isn't, do they deserve your rage? I mean, yeah, somewhere down the line that becomes a question. The real question is, do you deserve your rage? Because to give it to them, you've got to deliver it to your own physiology first. And if you don't deserve it, you don't want to be handing it to anybody else, because you get the original, they get the carbon copy. Active present love is the master solvent of trauma. Someone in the community has to get big enough to bring healing to trauma. Somebody within the community has to go beyond these projections. And be able to deliver active present love. Now, whether that's the individual working within self, the individual working within a group, this is something we can do for each other. This is something we can support. Now, most will say, oh, well, just forgive the perpetrators of those events that trigger my hidden PTSD. Pardon me. Unfortunately, this means the underlying patterns, often generational, are ignored and left hidden to be activated another day. So I let you off the hook for the terrible thing you've done that aroused all this pain in me, and if I play the game that forgiveness is about me letting you off the hook, and I do that, and I think I'm finished, then all of the trauma that's held within me that I'm replaying lays in wait to happen again. Please stop listening to that forgiveness advice, letting another off the hook, for it is based in total error. That advice has just got to go from our culture. It's got to stop. Got to stop forgiving people. Never forgive anyone for ever you, for anything. The person telling you that the solution to your repeating pattern is letting others off the hook for what's happening inside of you knows nothing about removing trauma from your genes, from your mind, from your emotions, from your body. A person knows nothing. If someone tells you you need to forgive another or yourself, understand they know nothing about actual forgiveness. Never forgive anyone, yet learn to forgive continuously. It sounds like a conflict, but let me explain. When feeling frustrated, angry, annoyed, terrorized, murderous rage, afraid, lonely, aversion, when responding out of your wounds, when blaming others, when blaming self, when you're unable to hold the mind of love present in yourself, or whatever, fill in the blank, if it's unlike love, it is always an opportunity for me to heal the pain constructs of my own mind, body, nervous system. Sadly, when I hold unresolved pain or trauma within, it's easy to put the underlying energies of that trauma when triggered into activity in my brain's internally constructed perceptual images of the other. The experience, the pretense that they're the cause of the repeating trauma I'm experiencing is the true definition of projection. When I make pictures of others out of my internally hidden dissociated pain, I believe my mind's lies, and I can pretend others are the reason I'm in pain. At that moment, I become a very devout, card-carrying member of the one-world, universal religion of blame. In this way, my mind's trauma or pain-based interpretation of events appears to be the truth, which directly leads away from the understanding of what's really going on. It leads away from true healing. Again, have you ever been the object of another's devout belief that you're the problem in their lives? Perhaps it's time to question your own membership in the Church of Blame. And seeing as how we're just about at the three quarters of the way through the hour, I'm going to put a hold on this part of the conversation and open the phone lines and see if anyone has a thought. What does that resonate for you? Does that make sense? Is there something about it that doesn't make sense? I'm looking for your feedback. Is there something that could be refined to, any piece of it that clicked for you as, oh, yeah, that's it, but then maybe we could add this or, so I'd love your feedback. And again, if you're listening on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Push one. Let's have a conversation. Michini, do we have anybody out there in listener land with a thought for us?
We do. We do have a hand up.
Awesome.
And I am going to
Let's
create a page on the website for this article. What are you going to call the article so I know what the title is?
I'm not sure yet. I'm actually thinking of integrating it into the new version of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I'm not just sure how. As a we'll have to talk about this.
All righty. Well, I will open the hand up or the microphone up, and it is Susan 610. You're on the air.
Hi. Michael, whoa, that's
yes,
really,
young lady.
Really, really good. Really good. I wonder if there's any way that you could mention or include or talk about, did you watch that? I think I sent it to you, a video by Bruce Lipton on the programming that young children in the Middle East now are being subjected to as young school children. They're all taught how to use guns in Israel, and in the Palestinian side, they're all learning how to march and wear their military uniforms. The kids
yep.
are being trained. So
yep.
did you see that?
I have not seen that, but actually the space where I referred to the woman, it was a woman in the Middle East without getting into the politics of it all. It was a woman in the Middle East who moved to from America to her community, her racial community in the Middle East, and she put her children in school in her community there, and her children were taught to subtract by subtracting the enemy, the other, the kids on the other side of the line, from the world.
Mm-hmm.
And she became an activist. Jeannie, do you remember when we met with that woman in Fort Lauderdale and we did some breath work with her? That was just like mind-boggling to think that's what these kids are being taught. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's a movement afoot to bring guns into the schools in America. Arm those teachers. Yeah, that's what we need, more guns. Well, the gun manufacturers do really well with this stuff Eisenhower suggested. Now, watch that military-industrial complex. They're tricky bastards, and they will empty your pockets into theirs with 1,000 frauds and lies based in keeping people in fear.
Well, the paper, back to the paper, it's just really good. I can't think of anything. I'd have to have it in front of me the way I did before, but
yeah, I'll
I can't
send it
think
to you.
Of anything. Great.
Yeah, I actually just kind of finished this section of it this morning, and so I will send it to you for further comments and thoughts. Appreciate your input.
Well, I have a sort of cosmetic. This is going to seem strange, but on the first Facebook post, you interspersed your comments with hearts and things. And there's nothing wrong with hearts and love and all that stuff. But I thought it was a distraction, and partly just that it would take people away from taking what you're saying seriously. You're using these little emojis. And
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense or whether I'm prejudiced.
Okay, that's good feedback. I received that. I hear you. That's a good thought. Hadn't thought of it that way. I had thought of it in terms of, reminding people to hold to the space of love, but yeah, I can see where it would be a distraction from the flow. So I will take that under consideration and advisement. Thank you.
Okay. Well, in the ultimate publication, I didn't picture you would actually do this. I thought this was something you used on Facebook to seem to remind people throughout that you mean well and you're loving and you're friendly. You don't need to do that. I don't think anybody's going to question what you're saying or think that you're coming from anything but a loving place, because you're not taking sides. Bruce Lipton said it beautifully at the beginning of his video. He said, people ask me, well, are you going to back us? Are you going to back or the other guys? And he said, I can't do that because the
Let's
problem.
Go for truth, folks.
Yeah, the problem
lies beneath
all this. Yeah, the problem is beneath all this, and it's universal and shared. Is nobody's a bad guy. We're all in bad trouble. That's it. But anyway,
it's a great tune out there. Many years ago, you probably remember it. The middle of the line was, there ain't no good guys, there ain't no bad guys, there's only you and me, and we just disagree. And we're coming out of these unresolved generational traumas that sooner or later somebody has to grow up and address and take care of, or our children and their children are going to be experiencing the same thing as with, you know, Abraham and his descendants, and this is just an old family feud going on, you know, still going on, and another family wiped out, another family wiped out, another family wiped out. It's insane.
It's, I'm sure all of us are doing a lot of wake-up sheets, and because it's very hard to witness without having reactions, and then you have to go in there and dig around and say, well, you know, the upset is in me, and I'm very poor at doing this. I've had a lot of waking times at night just picturing the anguish and unable to imagine what it must be like. And it's certainly spilling over into our refugee community, where people come in pale and, you know, just struggling to be okay. And they feel they're safe over here, more or less, but we're not really, any of us. So, good work, really good work. A lot of work went into that.
There have been a few hours put into it, yes.
Yeah.
And there will be many more before it's complete, but thinking about where I might, aside from in a book, I might publish it and see what happens.
Are you? You said you were thinking of adding it to the latest version of Why Is This Happening to Me Again book, or are you thinking of a separate book? Yeah. Well,
no, it's going to be a little different than the original Why Is This Happening to Me Again, but I've been working on rewriting that to some degree. And so this, I think, would be kind of the theme of it in the early phases of the book, the newest, latest version of the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact that you cite Old Testament stories and that we attribute to God the instructions to wipe out this tribe and that tribe and the other tribe, you can understand why the problem exists, because that's their holy scripture. That's just part of
it. Myths and stories of the culture keep us entangled in it. Someday we got to wake up from it. In the book, The End of Suffering, I paint a picture, talk about Abraham. And, you know, he's got his son. He's going out to the woodshed to kill him. And the way I portray that there is God wiping his brow when he finally gets Abraham's attention.
Yeah.
And is able to explain to Abraham, you just listen to your generational mind that I want sacrifice. I don't want sacrifice. It's not it. I don't want it. And it's like, thank God I caught you before you killed your kid.
I know. And yet we carry.
And as I said the other day,
sacrifice.
Go ahead.
We carried wanting to sacrifice all the way up to the cross. And we have a wonderful new young rector who is very, very up on his scholarship, extremely bright and very loving. He would love this work, as a matter of fact. But somebody asked, do you mean to say God set it up that his son would be sacrificed, having said he doesn't want sacrifice? And somebody else said, I don't think so. I think God used the sacrifice as best God could, but never wanted that to happen. Who knows? You just don't know stuff like that, but it's a good question.
I think if we clean out the insanity from our mind, based in hostility or fear, and sacrifice is one of the things that's based in hostility or fear, it becomes really clear that the mind of love could never ask for, could never desire, could never want sacrifice. However, when, you know, thousands of years back into ignorance, you know, there was a storm and, you know, the barn burned down because it was hit by lightning, and they went, oh, God is unhappy with us. We should go sacrifice a cow, and then, and the next storm comes, and gee, the chicken coop doesn't get burned down, so see, our sacrifice worked. And I, my offering is that's how that whole baloney, that whole projection from unresolved trauma has become gospel. And it needs to be thrown out. Mm-hmm. It needs to be thrown out. Mm-hmm. It's insane. And we need to have a standard. Is it based in sanity or is it based in insanity? And if it's based in insanity, it's time to take it out of our minds that that's got anything to do with the Creator.
Absolutely.
Because that's
insane. Totally.
That's an insane belief.
Yeah.
And I can understand why people who wake up beyond that become atheists, because if that's the thing I'm supposed to pray to, thanks, but I'll make mine vanilla. I can understand how somebody just steps away from it totally.
Yeah.
And then they become deniers that there's even a creative force in existence.
Yeah,
which
that's
is also
where it
another
goes.
Which is another form of insanity. But you know, it's like we have to clean this thing up, and you know, generations and generations of poverty stricken minds found, hey, you know, I get people to deliver me a goat and some eggs and a few chickens every week. If I get them together every Sunday or every Saturday and I hellfire and brimstone with them, I get fed. And I've been having trouble feeding myself, so, hey, this hellfire and brimstone thing's a pretty good thing.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody believes that the Creator's got anything to do with hellfire and brimstone, thanks, but make mine vanilla. It's time for us to wake up into what this actually means. So I'm with you on that, and I just looked up, I'm looking at Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, A Crossroad for Humanity by Bruce Lipton. He posted it 6 days ago.
Yeah.
Is that the one you sent me? Okay, cool. Yeah, I just looked
I
it up.
So.
I'll give it a listen when we finish.
It's amazing. And, you know, he and Michael Singer have something in common, which is really sweet. They're both very funny. It's as if they take themselves very lightly. There's a lot of laughter. Even Bruce managed to make it sound as if we have hope. There's hope here. This is encouraging.
Yeah.
He managed to look at it that way. It's so good just to hear that hope in their way of presenting themselves. But they both seem to take themselves not very seriously. They've got their work there, yes, but they've stepped away in a neat way.
I have a friend whose favorite quote or thought she posits in a space like this is, you know, why do angels fly? Because they take themselves lightly.
Yes. Right. Well, I had a quick question.
Go for it.
Well, it's unrelated, and of course it's related because it's related to the work. The gift of our Michael here is that he is showing me a lot of early childhood preconceptions, cultural things, family lore, prejudices. But one of them I'm having the most trouble cracking is that he is literally paralyzed by his own sense of being a victim. And when you said that which I feared, Job's thing, that which I feared the most has come upon me, I see my housemate here saying, well, there are so many bad people out there, and I have to watch out for myself,
yeah.
and I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I can't do the other. And I don't have enough love or latitude in my heart to be able to open myself wide enough to keep active loving space. I'm working on it all the time.
Well, I think you have plenty of that. I think you're tricking yourself.
Oh, that's a nice thing for you to say.
Plenty of it. What you have an excess of is unresolved trauma that matches his trauma.
Well, I was talking to Dr. Kim about that because Michael and my little sister are so much alike. And yet my little sister and I were brought up in the same nest. And I got out by making certain early decisions and finding that certain things worked. And I said before, I grabbed the good part. And I had a wonderful meeting with my sister yesterday where suddenly I was able, for various reasons, to feel how much I love her. And that hasn't been available my whole life. I have been mad at her for making bad choices and setting herself up as a victim and needing to be taken care of.
Do you hear the denial? Dear heart, do you hear the denial?
No, tell me.
I've been mad at my sister for blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
You've never been mad at your sister. You're lying to yourself.
Okay.
You've just been mad. You've got anger inside.
Mad.
Now you can put it into your brain's image of your sister or your spouse or, you know, maybe even me.
Mm-hmm.
But you've never been mad at me or anybody else, and nobody else has ever been mad at anyone. But when we live in denial, remember, once again, what's our definition of denial? When I think or speak as of something outside of me, is a gospel moving inside of me. So I'm so mad at her because she did this. No, you're not. You're just mad.
Okay, I got it.
And that inhibits the presence of love. That's what shuts down the presence of love expressing through you. There's plenty.
You.
I mean, there's no such thing as a quantity of love or a quality of love or a restriction or a loss of. There's simply, it's blocked or it's open. The field is open. When we live in denial, when I think or speak as though that out there is the cause of what's blocking the awareness of myself as the presence of love, then I lose that, the essence of myself. And that just reinforces everything painful.
It does. I can feel that. Okay, that's good. How many times do we have to hear this?
77 times 70, maybe?
Yeah, thanks. Well, good.
Coming through on a new level.
May it stay in this time.
So holding a space for you and Michael to have a true meeting of the souls, where healing happens in both directions, and each of you is able to literally tear up your membership card in the One World Religion of Blame.
Oh, amen. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. So remember that to say, I've been mad at my sister for doing this, that's a statement right out of the Bible of the One World Religion of Blame.
Yeah.
My sister does this, and it brings up so much unresolved anger in me, I can hardly think. Now you're telling yourself the truth. And just open the pathway to own what's moving in you and to forgive it, to remove it. That's how you get free of it. But you can't ever get free of it if you can't own it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in each, you know, and we have to give up that card 1,000 times.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome, young lady. Well, the show has announced to me in my ear that it's over. So I'm going to hold the space.
Okay.
I will send that to you for refinement and thoughts. And everybody, thanks for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It is truly an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Appreciate y'all.